I want to finish out now and talk about the management of ER positive in general, HER2 negative disease, because triple positive is another story. We're going to talk about ER positive, HER2 negative disease. And we could talk a lot about local therapy and genomic assays. I saw some questions coming on that. But we're going to focus today on metastatic disease because, again, we have a relatively recent approval of an important agent that we need to talk a little bit about. So we're going to talk about new agents in metastatic ER-positive breast cancer, particularly CDK4/6 inhibitors that have been out there for a few years, and now the more recent drug, the PI3 kinase inhibitor, alpelisib. So just in terms of some basics about how hormonal therapy works, Virginia, I was just doing an interview this morning with Rob Dreiser. He's going to be on the prostate cancer program here. He was going through the biology and endocrinology of prostate cancer. Can you talk a little bit, Virginia, about endocrine therapy of breast cancer and the difference? You know, we asked this question here, does fulvestrant work the same as tamoxifen? It's just IM, and the answer is no. It's actually very different. Can you just briefly review, before we kind of get into CDK and alpelisib, Virginia, how hormonal therapy works?
So the target in ER-positive breast cancer is the estrogen receptor, and there's three classes of agents that we now use as far as endocrine therapy. Tamoxifen, which is a selective estrogen receptor modulator, which means that it modulates the estrogen receptor. In some tissues, it works as an anti-estrogen, so it inhibits the ER. In other tissues, it works as an anti-estrogen. So based on the fact that in breast, it works as an anti-estrogen, it inhibits the ER and therefore kills breast cancer cells. Aromatase inhibitors inhibit aromatase, so they prevent estrogen from being formed altogether. And so therefore, it can't bind the estrogen receptor, it can't kill breast cancer cells, or it can't promote breast cancer. And then finally, fulvestrant is an estrogen receptor downregulator, which basically means it destroys the estrogen receptor. So very different actions. One, it inhibits the receptor with tamoxifen. The other one doesn't allow estrogen to be formed with aromatase inhibitors. And the other one, fulvestrant, destroys the estrogen receptor.
So let's talk about two of the newer advances in terms of this ER-positive disease. And one is the use of CDK4/6 inhibitors. We'll show you the data in a second. These are just some warm-up questions we put in there. And we'll hear about the fact that palbociclib and ribociclib seem to have a similar toxicity profile, more oriented around neutropenia. And then abemaciclib, less neutropenia, but more GI toxicity. And we'll talk about how that plays out. The one where you have to check the EKG is a ribociclib as well. And then finally, alpelisib that's used in people with PI3 kinase inhibitors. I'm going to just sort of skip this thing and get into CDK4/6 inhibitors, Virginia. And if you can talk a little bit about, you know, your vision of how these agents work and why is it that we're combining it with hormonal therapy?
So CDK4/6 inhibitors, as the slide you just showed depicts so clearly, they cause arrest of the cell cycle. And so the cell cannot replicate and therefore it'll die. And we combine them with several treatments, and now there's nice data in HER2-positive disease as well, but mostly in the ER-positive setting, when you combine that with an anti-estrogen therapy, as you can see here, the two pathways are very related. And therefore, when you combine a CDK4/6 inhibitor with either an aromatase inhibitor or fulvestrant, you get a really nice response and a good cell death.
Good cell death. That sounds a little interesting.
Cancer cell death.
What about side effects? You know, I mentioned the fact that sort of it looks to me like when I hear you talking about it, you kind of break them down into palbo and ribo versus abemaciclib. Marissa, can you talk a little bit about your experience with these agents and what you've seen in terms of tolerability, particularly again as it relates to these two problems that we see different amounts of, GI and neutropenia? How much of the problem is the neutropenia, incidentally, Marissa?
I know with palbo and ribo, we definitely watch patients a little bit closer as we get them started on therapy to make sure their blood counts are managing and they aren't dropping too much within the first, you know, month or two. But really, I think they're all overall well tolerated. Definitely the more diarrhea with the abemaciclib, you know, can be more of a challenge. But overall, I think patients tolerate them well.
So Joyce, we had a question in there about management of premenopausal patients, and I put in postmenopausal patients, because in general, that's the way to look at the fact that you have a premenopausal patient, you make her postmenopausal, and then you treat her the same way as a postmenopausal patient?
Yes, that's exactly right, Neil. We treat the premenopausal woman who has ER-positive metastatic breast cancer. We treat her the same as postmenopausal women, except that we need to add an LHRH agonist, the gosarilin or the leuprolide, to her either fulvestrant or her aromatase inhibitor with a CDK4/6 inhibitor. And she benefits exactly the same as the postmenopausal women from the CDK4/6 inhibitors.
Of course, you know, postmenopausal breast cancer is much more common, so there are many more patients in clinical trials. And it was actually a while before we started to see data specifically related to premenopausal patients. This Mona Lisa 3 study, I think, was one of the first ones, if not the first one, to really do that. Any comments about that, Joyce, and, you know, sort of how CDK inhibition, specifically ribociclib, played out in premenopausal women? It looks kind of like the same way it plays out in postmenopausal women.
Yeah, this is a beautiful curve here. This is an overall survival benefit in the first line setting of premenopausal women combining the nonsteroidal AI, an aromatase inhibitor, with ribociclib plus an LHRH agonist, gosarilin or leuprolide, compared to no ribociclib. Really, really nice to see a 29% reduction in the risk of death. So this has really become for sure the standard of care for our first line premenopausal ER-positive metastatic patients.
Daniel, any comment on treating younger women, you know, ablating the ovaries, suppressing the ovaries, you know, causing sort of premature menopause? Now we're adding things on top of that. What have you observed in terms of how patients tolerate these strategies?
Well, typically, like you said, especially when you do ovarian function suppression, you know, the biggest side effect that I've seen, especially in the younger women, is the hot flashes are usually the biggest bothering symptom that I've noticed with the women. So, you know, helping them manage that symptom, making sure we're keeping it controlled, because it can be very bothersome if they're out and about and they get a supreme hot flash and they're sweating. You know, it just can be really uncomfortable. So that, in my experience, has been usually one of the more biggest concern from our patients, is these hot flashes that can really be very bothersome to our patients. So we just do what we can to help manage them. In some cases, we add medications to really help suppress that hot flash side effect. So it just varies per woman. Some don't get it, some do. Just, I tell every patient, everybody's different and everybody reacts differently. We'll just kind of monitor them and go as we treat, really.